No one has ever calculated the unemployment rate for poets in the world. Perhaps the best you can do is to track the concern in the eyes of a worried parent when a kid announces that he or she plans to be a poet when they grow up. Poet, huh? Not a lot of full-time jobs for poets, although perhaps part of being a poet is not worrying about such things quite so much. One solid gig for a poet is to be named U.S. Poet Laureate. Robert Frost, Billy Collins, and Maxine Cumin have all held the post. Frost is still in print, and Collins and Cumin are still writing and publishing and teaching. Last week, the latest poet to be named U.S. Poet Laureate was announced. Philip Levine, who did plenty of work in industrial America before becoming a writer and teacher. His work is about, in part, the factory floors and streets of Detroit that formed his early world view. And it's also a part of his steady, calm, poetic voice of many decades now.
Yeah, 60-some years.
There we go. That's a few months. You know, unlike other celebrities, you know, in the poetry world, you don't have your Grammys too much. I mean, you got the Pulitzer, you got some literary awards here and there. Does this, Poet Laureate position feel a little bit like a lifetime achievement?
No, I don't consider it that, to be honest. It's a piece of good fortune. It's no bigger deal, say, than, the Pulitzer Prize or the National Book Award. And I have those. And it's nice. It's very nice, especially at my age, not expecting anything like this.
Well, given the consideration of your age, which you've referred to, and we certainly don't want to, overtax you necessarily, but it seems to me a plausible mission for Philip Levine as a poet laureate of the United States is to reinvigorate the literary voice of the American worker over the next year.
That would seem quite apt, and I'm being prodded into that direction. In a way, I'm tired of being identified as the poet of the working class. I haven't been a member of the working class since I was about 30. In the intervening 50 years, I was an unhappy professor because I shouldn't say never. For many years, I didn't fit that well into the academic scene. In fact, I actually fit better into the industrial scene. But I finally learned how to be at home there.
And your response to the working scene and the industrial scene was really a sense of its beauty, its stark beauty there in Detroit, where, you're in your sort of industrial experience, I think. It's mostly what you find in your work. Detroit, and having grown up in Michigan myself, Detroit is a beautiful, kind of scary, big-sized place with amazing workers doing amazing things. It's almost more intense to view from a step removed rather than actually from on the assembly line, wouldn't you say?
It was for me. That is to say, I was writing poetry while I was working there, but I was incapable at that time of writing with any clarity, scope about that experience. I mean, I tried again and again to write the poems of the life I was leading, and I was completely unable to do it worth a damn. I mean, I threw all those poems away, none of them. God bless it, have never, they don't exist anymore except as smoke. It wasn't until I was about 30 that I wrote even a half-assed, decent poem about a factory. And it wasn't until I was about 35 that I wrote some good poems about those years. There's a real irony there because when I was working, and I found the work pretty exhausting, and except for the pay, not rewarding, or so I thought at the time, I thought doing this and getting worn out like this, this will stop me from ever being the poet I want to be. You know, then I realized, you know, some years later, it's exactly the material that I'm trying to transform into poetry. But I think that came, you know, after a willing suspension, you know. I began to see it very differently.
You know, it's amazing that you say that. You know, we share this industrial experience. I mean, I'm no poet, but I worked at a desk plant and a welding factory in western Michigan that produced automobile components, much like your Cadillac transmission factory. And, man, every day, get me out of here. And yet I'm so nostalgic for those strange, odd mornings in that big, huge building.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. They've taken on, because of the light and the size of the places, they've taken on almost like a cathedral atmosphere.
It's true.
And the noise, which was prodigious, seems to have... I don't carry that so strongly in my memory. What I carry is the visual. Also, after I left that life and sort of wormed my way into academia, you know, I don't have a doctorate, and moved up the scale, and once I was publishing, then I could get a decent job teaching. I began to feel just exactly what you described, a kind of nostalgia for it. Also, I realized that the people that I had been working with in industrial Detroit had a kind of, I hesitate to use this word, but I'm going to do it anyway, dignity, that I rarely found in academia. Rarely. I mean, these were people with nothing behind them. I mean, they were living on their physical strengths and skills to make a living. And yet, when we were badly treated, we were willing to go out on strike. We were willing to risk what we had to stand up for our rights. Can you imagine that at Harvard? Not that I ever taught at Harvard. Well, I taught at Princeton. I can't imagine my Princeton colleagues saying, they can't treat us like this. We're human.
Philip Levine has been chosen as America's new poet laureate. Tomorrow we'll learn about his adventures far from Detroit in the Spain of Francisco Franco. Be sure to visit us at thetakeaway.org to submit your own poetry. You could win a chance to join Philip Levine with us on the air to talk about some poetic ideas for getting America back to work.
You're the poet.